From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Telling it as it is, David Curtin on TNT.
Hello and welcome to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk. It's Wednesday, the 27th of March. Today is the day that nomination papers have to be in to the Greater London Authority for candidates who want to stand in the London Mayor and Assembly election. This is slightly before when they have to be in for the other local elections in local councils around the country. So we may have an announcement even tonight. The Greater London Authority has to announce the candidates within 2 working days of the deadline. So it could be tonight, it could be tomorrow, or it could be on Tuesday. Whatever happens, it's going to be very, very interesting. Now, I was at City Hall yesterday handing in nominations for the Heritage Party to stand in the London Assembly. But of course, more attention is going to be focused on the London Mayor election, because the mayors that we've had in London have not been very good. This is a position that has existed for 24 years now. Ken Livingstone was not a particularly good mayor, neither was Boris Johnson, but the one we've had for the last 8 years has been an absolute disaster for London, and that of course is Sadiq Khan. And I know him very well, not in a particularly friendly manner, because I was on the London Assembly myself for 5 years, where I questioned him about all kinds of things that he was doing wrong and mismanaging London and making strange announcements and policies which didn't make much sense and didn't help ordinary people, particularly people who drive cars. And one of the main issues coming up in the London Assembly is the ongoing war on cars, particularly for people who live in outer London, but also people who live around the edges of London and drive in the commutes, because he has, of course, imposed this thing called the ULEZ, the ultra low emission zone, where if you have a petrol car that is pre-2006 or a diesel car that is pre-2015, you have to pay £12.50 a day just to drive into the Greater London area. And on top of that, there's a congestion charge of £12 a day if you want to drive into central London as well. Now, this is happening in London, but it's indicative and a model of what is happening all over the country as well. Cities like Birmingham, Portsmouth, Bath, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Aberdeen have introduced similar schemes, whether they're low emission zones, clean air zones, it doesn't matter what they're called, motorists are being hit in the war on cars, as well as 15-minute neighbourhoods and low-traffic neighbourhoods where there are road blockages all over the place in lots of London boroughs, which are approved by the mayor because he likes the general direction that climate alarmism is taking people and the way that people are losing their freedom to travel around in their own cities and towns in their own vehicles. This is not the only thing that he's done wrong. There has been spiralling out of control crime in London in the last 8 years since Sadiq Khan took office. Almost every week we hear of a stabbing, often between groups of young men who are getting into gang fights with other young men. And tragically, a lot of these stabbings and a lot of the violent crime that we see in London is black on black crime. But of course, no one wants to mention this because it's not politically correct to do so. In fact, the people who adhere to critical race theory, and Sadiq Khan is clearly someone who does that, would rather talk about white privilege and diversity being our strength, which is a mantra he comes out with all the time. Well, a diversity of skills is a strength, but diversity based on different characteristics where everybody thinks the same way and nobody has any particular skills apart from to bang off cultural Marxist nonsense is not particularly something that is going to develop the economy or bring any prosperity to the City of London, the United Kingdom, or anywhere else. We need a new mayor of London. One of the other things which I think is absolutely appalling is that he continually talks about tackling violence against women and girls, but this isn't really done at all. We see some of the worst violence against women and girls is actually perpetrated by people in the Metropolitan Police, who the Mayor of London is in charge of in the role of Police and Crime Commissioner, such as the murder of Sarah Everard terribly in Clapham Common a couple of years ago. And as I questioned the mayor when I was there, every major city in England has found grooming gangs, and they are beginning to be tackled, except one city, which is London, the biggest city in England, the biggest city actually in Europe. And nobody seems to have found any grooming gangs in London. Now, if they are in existence in Birmingham and Leeds and Sheffield and Manchester and Newcastle, it's almost certain that this is going on in London as well. So my question when I was still a London Assembly member to the mayor was, why hasn't this been found in London? His response was, why are you asking me? Is it because of my ethnicity? Is it because of my religion? I said, Mr. Mayor, no, it's because you're in charge of police and crime, and you're the person who's got to do something about it. Clearly, still nothing has happened in the years since I asked the question. And for that reason as well, we need a new mayor of London who is going to stop the war on cars and is going to really properly tackle violent crime in London and spread out something good and a good model of how to be a mayor around the country, rather than the terribly bad model that we've had over the last 8 years. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk TNT. And as always, Gemma Cooper is here to talk about the latest headlines in the UK. Welcome to the show, Gemma.
Thank you very much, David. Well, the headlines in the UK today haven't really changed that much since a couple of hours ago when I cast my eye over what the mainstream and other sources were saying. We're heading towards the Easter holidays, and you can always tell that in the UK, the news slows down a little bit. But big story today, which I've discussed at length with Sonia Poulton, is that public confidence in the NHS, which of course we pay for, is at an all-time low, with only a quarter of the population now saying they're satisfied or happy with the services they're getting from their GPs or from hospitals. Also, the church is under real attack today from the Home Office and the Home Secretary, who says it's undermining the asylum system process. Basically, this comes after the acid attacker Abdul Azedi attacked a woman and also had convictions for sex offences, but was still granted a right of leave to stay in the UK as an asylum seeker because of his conversion to Christianity. It's emerged that James Cleverly has summoned pretty much all the Christian churches to the Home Office for a grilling as to what exactly is going on with the conversion process. And up to 8 million jobs could be gone in the next 3 to 5 years because AI is posing such a significant risk to many professions here in the UK. A leading think tank has issued a report on this and says we're at the fork in the road where it comes to AI, and the government, employers and unions must do all they can to ensure this doesn't spell the end for millions of UK workers.
Thank you, Gemma. The story here about the church being involved in the asylum process and complicit in actually helping certain asylum seekers to gain entry and permanent leave to remain in the UK is a story that is rumbling on and on and on. It has been going for a few weeks. It's a difficult story because, you know, being a Christian myself, I do understand the pastors and priests really want to see people become Christians, you know, particularly convert from other religions into the Christian faith. But it seems that, you know, there's more than this going on. And in some cases, they really have been either naive or actually actively helping to bring people into the country who really don't deserve to be here. Is that the case, do you think?
That seems to be the case with this one. It's new court papers, which have been obtained by many mainstream media outlets here in the UK, which show that Abdulazedi, who attacked a woman and two children with an acid substance in Clapham in South London, his background was known about by the Baptist church that was supporting his application. And it really is this particular example, which shows that really his whole right to stay in the UK, which was eventually granted by a judge, it was because of the backing of the church, even though they knew about his sex convictions of 2018, and they'd made him sign a safeguarding contract. Were saying, I won't come into the church buildings on my own. So they no alarm bells were raised at that. But also, he couldn't answer some basic faith tests when questioned on his Christian conversion, his Christian faith. He thought the Old Testament was all about Jesus Christ. He was confused about Christianity. And of course, as was reported yesterday, he had a full Muslim burial after being dragged out of the Thames as a request of friends and family. But the church was crucial in him gaining right to asylum. They backed him. One of the ministers, who's now retired, went to the appeal hearings four times and wrote letters saying he absolutely believed that Abdulazedi was genuine. He was aware that there were some fraudulent claims of Christian conversions to stay in the UK, but this wasn't the case with Azedi. And it was really the church that was crucial in convincing a judge who had his appeal turned down twice. It was the second time the judge said, all right, I'm not convinced. I don't think he's been strictly honest, but because the church is vouching for him, we'll let him stay. And of course, it had tremendously dire consequences. And that's why James Cleverly summoned, after this acid attack and after Abdulazedi's body was found, he summoned all the churches together and said, what on earth is going on? And I think much of the UK population in Britain will be saying, what is going on, actually? You know, so many red flags there. And yet the church continued to back him. So that's where we are with this story. You're quite right. It is rumbling on. And now there's this war between the church and the government. And the church has said today, we didn't corporately sponsor Mr. Azedi. We didn't get behind him as an organization. It was one minister who's now retired who basically gave him a reference. So the church is trying to distance itself from what happened. And the government is saying, no, that all churches have got questions to answer now.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Because if just one person who has that position decides that they're going to write a reference for someone, they're not going to all ask the administration and the people who are the leaders of the particular denomination, oh, am I allowed to write a reference for someone? I mean, people have free speech and they can decide to do that of their own volition. So unless you have, strict controls that this has to go through the hierarchy, and say to judges, well, don't accept testimony from a reverend or an individual minister, for example, then this problem's going to go on, I think. But, one of the things that strikes me about what you just said is the judge should know better. I mean, you've got a reference from a minister. Okay, fine. But then you've got this guy, Abdulazedi, and he was a convicted sex offender, I think twice. I mean, the judge, there's no way the judge should have given him leave to go free in the United Kingdom. I mean, if he was going to stay in the United Kingdom, he should have been kept in prison. So, I think the church, to some extent, is at fault. And, when you say the church, you're talking about lots of different denominations, Baptist, Methodist, Church of England, Catholic, and others as well. But the judges really should know better as well. The trouble is we have so many woke judges in the country, and some of them actually support as much immigration as they possibly can get into the country.
Well, yeah, you're quite right. And when we say the church, we're talking about the Church of England, which does encompass, a broad range of denominations. This is the Baptist church we're talking about in the north of England. And the minister was a minister in Jarrow in Northumberland who gave the reference. He's now retired. He's been approached for comment and he's not talking. I think he's realised, what a scandal this has actually caused. But the Baptist church that he was working for, was a member of, has said exactly what you've just said. Said, look, we don't grant asylum. the judge who eventually granted his appeal would have had full access to his criminal records. That's the job of the state to look into people's backgrounds. So yes, there is a two-way street here. And what were the morals and values of that particular judge when he was deciding this? I mean, the judge admitted he's actually said, these court papers today have revealed, the judge said, "I'm not convinced Mr. Rossetti has been entirely honest, but I'm still going to grant I'm still going to say he can stay because he's now a Christian, and I'm going by what this minister has said." So it's like a sort of toxic dance between the two organizations, and depending on, as you rightly say, where the judge is coming from and the judge's own particular mores, as it were, with regard to the UK. There's no doubt in this instance it went horrendously, hideously wrong, and it has brought the whole issue to the public fore. James Cleverly summoning all Church of England leaders to say what the hell is going on, I think is he understands the public mood on this. And as you say, you know, the Christian church does like to convert, especially from other faiths. Is there an economic reason for that? I'm asking you, actually, as a Christian, David, is there something about the more parishioners you have, the more people that come to your congregations and come to services, the more money you'll get from the diocese? I don't know. But the church from the outside looks like a corporation, the same as many other corporations, albeit a faith-based one to some people. So I wonder if that's an element too. But certainly today, there is an increasing amount of tension between the Home Office, the Home Secretary and the Church of England on this particular issue.
Yeah, look, personally, I don't think that there is a corporate motive. I think the motive is just people want, you know, ministers, pastors, priests want to save souls. And this is part of the great commission that Jesus gave to the church in the Bible in his time. And it still stands today. People want people to become Christians so they can get to know God and have their eternity secure after they die. I think that's the main motivation. And people can be acting out of very, very genuine motivation there to try to get people to come into the church, to become Christian, to become baptized. But of course, there is deception. You know, takia is part of the Muslim religion. So people are allowed to practice deception in order to get into the country and get on in society until there is a Muslim majority. I mean, that is part of, that is a principle of Islam. So there are all these questions to go around these things and all of these nuanced aspects. And, you know, I hope that people looking into this will take all of those things into account, because it is a very difficult and thorny subject. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think we both agree the number one issue here is to keep British people safe in our own country. So we must make sure that no one else who has got a criminal record is allowed to enter the country or is allowed to stay in the country. Anyway, thank you, Gemma, so much for coming and joining me and talking about these stories today. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on Today's News Talk TNT. And I have with me today Jonathan Tilt, who is standing to be the West Yorkshire Mayor. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hi, David, and thanks for having me on, and great to see you again. Yeah.
No, really good to see you. I've spoken to you a few times before about elections and politics and all things to do with that.
I've been trying to use elections since 2020 to try and disrupt the process and get in amongst them and provide a counter narrative to the sort of statist narrative that prevails and is pushed by all the other mainstream and virtually all the other small parties. I obviously exclude the Heritage Party from that. But it's just to use it as a platform, potentially, hopefully, possibly to get elected as well, because there's not many people standing to be West Yorkshire Mayor. We can talk about it more, but there's a great focus on the London mayoral election, which I think you've stood in yourself before. But there are mayor elections throughout the country, and the process now is very much towards trying to focus powers on these individual elected mayors. Both at the expense of Parliament, which is just a sort of talking sideshow these days, and the sort of imploding local authorities who are in many parts of the country transferring powers to the mayors. So these individual mayors, particularly in the metropolitan areas, are going to be key figures going forwards, I think. And I think they're key figures in how our opponents, our enemies, plan to implement the sort of moves towards a world federation or whatever it is. They want to govern locally through mayors. So capturing one or two of these posts would be brilliant, because it's a great opportunity to disrupt that process, if nothing else.
It certainly would be, and this seems to be exactly what you're talking about, the devolution agenda or the levelling up agenda, if you like. Yeah. They're creating these combined authorities. So where you are in West Yorkshire, there are five unitary authorities, but each of them has given some power to this single person who is a Labour person at the moment. And also they've got some powers coming down to them from Parliament, from both directions. So they're incredibly powerful in this area. And West Yorkshire is a big area. I think there's nearly 3 million people live there. So it's very significant.
It's enormous, yeah. Yeah, it is. And obviously, from their perspective, it's much easier to capture and control one individual than it is 500 councillors or however many councillors there are across West Yorkshire. So I genuinely believe that's what's going on. You see these world mayor conventions, which West Yorkshire isn't part of yet, and I'm sure it will quickly become part of after this election, should Tracy Brabin win again. And I do think that's future lockdowns, future restrictions on travel, whatever they come out with next, I think mayors will be expected to play a key role in implementing that. So just to have one or two mayors across the country that say, no, we're not doing that, that's not happening here, will make an enormously powerful statement, but will also add to freedom and liberty within those areas. And hopefully one of those areas is West Yorkshire.
Absolutely. But how is it going, though? Because it is very expensive for an ordinary person to find a deposit to stand for one of these combined authority mayoral posts, isn't it? I mean, I know London, it's £10,000 for the deposit. I mean, how much is it where you are?
It's 5,000 in West Yorkshire, which we've nearly got there with crowdfunding. What's my main bugbear at the minute is 100 nominations, which we've got. You have to have 100 people nominate you from West Yorkshire, with a minimum of 10 from each of the five districts, which is not quite as onerous as the London situation, but it's still quite hard work. I mean, we're in Bradford yesterday, because I'm obviously from one end of West Yorkshire, so the bulk of my signatures are going to come from there. So we were in Bradford collecting signatures yesterday. But yes, it's interesting that they make these elections quite difficult to stand for. I mean, council elections are very easy to stand for and don't cost anything. Parliamentary elections, as you know, it's 500 deposit and 10 people to nominate you, so it's a bit of a pain, but it's within the reach of lots of people. But they're making these harder and harder to stand for, these elections. And I think the West Yorkshire one is one of the cheaper combined authority mayoral elections. I think East Midlands is 10 or 15,000 as well. Wow. So they are trying to price particularly independents and very small parties out of the elections process, aren't they?
It really, they definitely are. So, I mean, if you're in one of the older parties, I mean, I don't like to give them any credibility, but the parties that have been around for a long time that are ruining the country, they've got lots of donors. They've got businesses donating to them, trade unions donating to them. So £10,000 to some of these, we've got property developers will just, give them 10 million just like that. £10,000 is nothing for some of these parties. But, for an ordinary person who wants to represent ordinary people like you do. It's very, very tough. And, you know, obviously Tracy Braben has been there since the post was created. I think it was created just in May 2021. So it shows how they're rolling out this program. But what would you do that is different to her?
Well, essentially, I would use the post largely to platform freedom. And to platform opposition to the sort of tyrannical agenda, to support our right to travel by transport. I mean, Tracy Braben is on record as, because one of the key sort of roles of the West Yorkshire Mayor is integrated transport. And, you know, Tracy leads up to sort of, they've got 870 million budget for integrated transport within West Yorkshire. She's on record as saying in future, travel within West Yorkshire will be by walking, cycling, bus and integrated transport. No mention of private cars in there, even though they currently make up 86% of journeys within the country. I don't know what they are within West Yorkshire, but it will be similar to that. So yes, fine, spend more on integrated transport, and public transport in West Yorkshire is pretty dire and dismal, I will say. So I don't have any objection to that, and that will continue, but it will not be used as a cover and an excuse for restricting travel by private vehicle. Because travel by private vehicle is socially and economically essential. I mean, there's, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs across the county that depend upon it. You know, plumbers, care assistants, people have to travel from one place to another. But so, I mean, you don't. It shouldn't be something you have to justify your freedom of movement. It's just, you know, an innate right. If I want to drive across to the other side of West Yorkshire for whatever reason, I should be able to do it without having to have a pass or use my permit or use one of my 100 allocated travel days or whatever they're going to come up with. And that's primarily what I will be there to defend, is that right to travel. West Yorkshire, I mean, the West Yorkshire Mayor also doubles up as the Police and Crime Commissioner for West Yorkshire. So we will have oversight of West Yorkshire Police. And it was, you know, it was interesting during the sort of dark days of 2020, 2021, how some police forces were very much used in forwarding the tyrannical agenda and, you know, arresting people for having coffees on park benches and stuff. If I'm West Yorkshire Mayor, that won't be happening within West Yorkshire. We will have a police force that is focused on fighting crime and ditches the woke agenda. Goes back indeed to protecting the public and pursuing criminals, basically.
Yeah, that's just how it should be. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I hope you do get in. You sound like you're going to be the best candidate in West Yorkshire. Look, don't go away, Jonathan. We'll come back after this quick news break and we'll ask you about some more of the things that you're doing. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Now,
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russia has accused the US and the UK of working with Ukraine to orchestrate last week's deadly terrorist attack in Moscow. There's been an awkward exchange between two journalists inside the Kremlin, with a Russian news chief delivering a spectacular smackdown to a BBC reporter. And Argentina's president Javier Milei is reportedly planning on firing 70,000 government workers in the coming months.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. And Jonathan Tilt is with me. Jonathan is standing as an independent candidate in the West Yorkshire mayoral elections, which are coming up on the 2nd of May this year. And Jonathan, you also run a very interesting project called the Vote Freedom Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what's the purpose of that project?
Yeah, yes. Essentially, this came out of the sort of demise of the Freedom Alliance political party, which, I mean, I was never involved in politics before. I just set up the Freedom Alliance political party in 2020 to try and use elections to contest what was going on. The learning experience from that, for me and the others, or most of the others that were involved in running it, was running a political party is needlessly hard work. And it moves your focus away from fighting elections. There's also a real appetite out there for voting independent amongst the public, I think. And also, I increasingly think, and you'll lead your political party, so you may not be the person that wants to hear this.
I might slightly disagree with you because
the whole notion of a party with a leader and a chair and stuff doesn't fit very well with the freedom movement, I think. I think we need a much more sort of disaggregated attempt at fighting elections. But there are some benefits from having sort of organisation and coordination and all of that. So what we're trying to do with the Vote Freedom project is provide the support network, the coordination, show people how to do elections, give them some materials, give them some support, help them fundraise, but without being a political party with a leader and a chair who tells them exactly what to do. So what we say to people, we've got 8 principles on the Vote Freedom website. If you just Google votefreedom.org, you'll find it. About freedom of movement and freedom of thought and freedom of expression. I don't think anybody listening to this program will probably have any difficulty with any of those 8 principles. Mm. If you agree with those 8 principles, you want to stand as a candidate, be it council election, parliamentary election, police commissioner election, whatever election, if you want to stand, we'll essentially help you and show you how to do it. We're a little support group for independent, freedom-minded candidates. Mm. We have got a lot of interest that we will definitely be sort of supporting about 15 to 20 candidates in the general election. And each time in council elections, I mean, it's a bit hard to pin down the exact numbers because there's people we very loosely support and others that we help quite a lot. We encourage people across the country to stand for election, council elections particularly. We've seen this, when you engage with the other legacy parties at the counts and things, they hate us standing as independents because they know it's a danger to them, it's a risk to them. People like the word independent. They might just go and put that cross next to them. And they don't. We're an unpredicted quality. They don't know what's going to happen when we put our names in the ballot paper. So they really, really don't like standing in
mind. You have to be careful these days because there are some people who are standing as independents in name, but they're actually still connected to some of the old parties. And they're actually, this is a strategy they're now employing. I think it's quite new, but it's a big deception because they know that independent candidates are becoming more popular. And I would also say, independently minded parties that are not in the establishment, like the Heritage Party too, but they're putting forward independent candidates, but they're still completely plugged in to the Tory, Labour, Lib Dem, Green, Uni party. And people vote for them thinking, oh, this is an independent, but they're not really genuinely independent, whereas you are. So people have to be very careful about who they vote for, don't they?
I agree with that. We are genuinely independent. We won't be whipping people or telling them, should anyone get elected, telling them how they should vote. We hope people will continue to adhere to those 8 principles that they've signed up to, but we've got no means of enforcing it if they suddenly turn coat on us. Yeah. In one sense, it's disheartening that some of the big parties are starting to do that, and they are starting to do that. But in another way, it's encouraging because it's part of the sort of decaying old infrastructure. They realise that these monolithic, enormous parties, particularly Labour and Tory, are really unpopular on the doorstep. And you see that. You see that yesterday. We were collecting signatures, and I was chatting to an Asian guy in Bradford who'd been here for about 40 years or so, and he was saying, well, I always vote Labour, but I don't really know why I vote Labour. It's just what you do sort of thing. And that is fracturing. That is going, I think. And I think the big parties realise it, and that's why they're trying to disguise themselves as independents. Mm.
Now, there are some people in the freedom movement who say, I'm not going to vote. Voting isn't going to change anything. We need to just crash everything and build a new system. And that it perturbs me because it discourages people from getting involved in politics. Obviously, I'm still involved very much. You are as well. What would you say to people who are pushing this line and encouraging people not to vote?
You're playing into the hands of our enemies, and you're walking into a trap. Basically, if you don't vote, effectively is a vote for whoever wins, which will usually be Labour or Tory in most parts of the country. So, if a Labour candidate wins and you haven't voted against them, you have as good as voted for them, and you are endorsing whatever they do. We see all the stuff in these. I think it's a lot of the time, to be honest, it's laziness dressed up as some sort of virtue. I'm not going to vote because I stand outside the system. I don't see any of these, this crushing of Parliament or storming of Parliament or these alternative communities or alternative systems. I don't see a great deal of that that's been built up over the last 4 years, if I'm honest. Essentially, I suppose what I would say is, are you 100% certain in your opinions? And there's very few opinions I'm 100% certain of. Because if you're not, it doesn't cost anything to vote. It costs a couple of minutes of your time. It takes it's less time than going to buy a pint of milk from the shop. It costs nothing. You're not contracting with the government. Nobody knows who you put your cross next to. Just, you know, if you're only 99% certain that it's a rigged system, then just go with the 1% on that particular one day. Give us a hand. Carry on doing whatever else you want to do. These things aren't, you know, mutually exclusive. You know, there's lots and lots of good work going on. You have the Light newspaper and stuff like that and the Rebels on Roundabout. So there's loads of good stuff in the Freedom Movement. And the people that are active in those are often the ones that are quite happy to be active and help in politics as well, because it does sort of divide down into those that really are prepared to get outside and do something, and those that are keyboard warriors at the end of the day, is my experience. So I would just suspend your disbelief. Please go and vote for us, or vote for another freedom-minded candidate. If you genuinely have got a choice between Labour, Tory, Liberals and Greens, etc., if there isn't, you know, a small party like Heritage and Independent or one of the other sorts of small, vaguely freedom-minded parties standing, then it's far more effective to spoil your ballot paper. Because they do notice that. Spoil it with, a statement, I do not consent, or, the vaccine is dangerous, or, whatever you want, your own particular choice statement. Because those get read by the by the candidates or the counts, as you know. I mean, they're pretty boring, these overnight counts. And often the highlight is looking at the spoiled papers, isn't it?
That's I've been to a number of counts, and, the number of reproductive organs that get written the papers is... It's quite extraordinary. I think they're used to that. But, someone else has been on the show, Graham Moore, made a very, very good point. If you write, I do not consent, they count that, or that actually is a genuinely, political statement. Whereas if you just spoil your ballot paper randomly, without saying anything of meaning, they don't care.
Okay, I didn't know
if
that,
you write, I do not consent, so then that doesn't mean something.
But do check out the other candidates, first of all, because there may be somebody on the list who is actually on our side. I was doing this with Freedom Alliance accounts, and you see that, statements like you're all supporting the vax, and it's like, we've got a political party here that's been set up specifically not to do that, and you're all asking that statement on the... It's quite frustrating. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope that you do very well where you are standing in West Yorkshire. Very, very important post and election there for a lot of people. And the Heritage Party is going to be standing candidates as well in as many places as we can in the locals and the national elections. Anyway, I'm sure we'll speak again before the elections come around. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining me today and talking about what you're doing. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Those beans smell heavenly.
Mm-hmm. Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, that's a great idea.
At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with the link.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
Discussing pressing issues. On today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the David Curtin Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. And it is fantastic to have back on the show Mads Palsvik, who is the leader of the Prosperity Party in Denmark. Mads, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, David. Good to see you again.
Yeah, really good to see you again. Now, I want to talk to you about some, you know, the general issues that you write about and speak about on X and on social media, as well as leading the party in Denmark. And that relates to something that happened in the news in the UK yesterday. There was an incident at Manchester Airport where a couple of Israelis were stopped, you know, in a routine check. They were held for a couple of hours and then let into the country. But there was a complete outpouring of the narrative that these people have been treated badly. They've been treated with anti-Semitism because they come from Israel. But if someone was came from Russia or Afghanistan and they were given the same treatment, no one would bat an eyelid. And do you think that the narrative of anti-Semitism is talked up more than, you know, that actually it is, there is anti-Semitism in existence in the West?
Oh, for sure, yeah. It's, leading Jewish scholars admit openly that it's a tool they use to get sympathy, and they're very successful in this. They managed to take over literally every institution in America. 85% of the Biden administration is Jewish, so they are very successful. And you mentioned Russia. Now, my wife is Russian Jewish, so I'm of course I am knowledgeable about what's going on there. And if you talk about anti-Russianism, if such a word exists, most people are not aware that Russian people were collectively punished for Putin's special military operation in Ukraine by having all their assets frozen overnight. They didn't even get 24 hours to transfer their money to Dubai or elsewhere. They just had all their assets frozen. So you have collective punishment of all Russians. I cannot send a package to my mother-in-law. I cannot send money to my mother-in-law. I cannot travel directly to my mother-in-law. I have to spend €1,000 to travel through Istanbul or Dubai to visit my mother-in-law, who is old, who is fragile, who is in hospital, on and off. And this is collective punishment, but this is just Russians. And then if you are reading the Talmud, then you would see that they write that a Jew is worth 10,000 non-Jewish, and a Jew should have 2,800 non-Jewish slaves. These are not my words. These are written in the Talmud. And I believe that some of the Jews in Hollywood and some of the Jews in the U.S. administration are clearly Talmud followers, because the chutzpah to think that you are entitled to 85% of the good jobs, and that goes for not only the Biden administration, that goes for all the leading jobs on U.S. universities, all the social engineering, the woke culture that is happening there, the anti-Christian, the hostility towards Christian people. The Hollywood is also 85% Talmud followers, and it's nonstop white guilt, social engineering, hate towards white people. Just open your borders. We need to get rid of the white people. And they literally, you can find so many examples of leading scholars, writers, politicians in the Knesset talking openly about, not only genociding the Amalek, they call the Palestinians, but actually all white people. So I think it's about time that all Jewish people, all the good Jewish people, and I know a lot of them, when you have a Jewish wife, you get a lot of Jewish friends. I love them. And I need more Jewish people now to go out and say, excuse me, maybe if we only 2% of them are America, maybe we shouldn't have more than 4 to 5% at most of the leading post in the society. Because it's all, who's talking about the diversity? It's the Jews who are talking about the diversity. It's the Jews who are using this tool of calling diversity by shaming and white guilt-tripping the white people, because we're all behind the Holocaust, all of us. Not only the some psychopathic Nazis who wanted to loot Jewish wealth, but all white people have to pay. So you can have while Americans don't have free healthcare, if a Jew is sick in America, they have free healthcare, even including organ transplantations. So there is a rule for thee and the rule for the other people. And this is based on this philosophy of collective punishment that is inherent in the Talmud. This Amalek, kill all of them. So if one Muslim commits a crime against a Jew, then kill all of them. This is collective punishment. Wow. This is not Christian. In Christianity, we have an eye for an eye, which means you can, if someone is committing a crime, you can go for one person and only him. You cannot kill his wife and children. It's not a Christian thing to do. And I would like to see a more Christian world order in the Christian societies, and a Muslim and a Hindu and a Buddhist in their societies, of course. I'm not saying Christians should be running the whole show. I'm just saying in the Christian countries, I would like to see a Christian world order of love, of forgiveness, of all men are created equal, and never collective punishment, only the perpetrator. And what we're seeing is we're having a Talmudian world order right now, perpetrated by the 85% in the Biden administration, and that is hate, that is revenge, that is racial supremacy. That the only genocide we're allowed to hear about is crimes committed against Jewish people. The 50 to 100 million Russian, mainly Orthodox Christians that were murdered, we're not allowed to talk about. Any other genocide, it's not important, because there is a racial supremacy inherent in the Talmud. And I would like to see all my Jewish friends who might watch this, and any other Jewish person who are lovely people, and I love Jewish people. They're bright, they're fun to be with, they're great people. But please, come on. Now, if you're promoting diversity, then try to be a little bit diverse. Allow some Hindus, some Buddhists, some Muslims, and Christians to be allowed to make some movies and run the Wall Street, run the universities, get an occasional seat in the Congress and the Biden administration.
That is an absolutely extraordinary figure, 85% of the Biden administration being Jewish. I didn't know it was that high. I'm being a Christian myself, and I'd say the majority of people in the United States, which obviously is the most powerful country in the West, would say they're Christian. But I think there is a very big blind spot here, because a lot of Christians would support Jews because they think of themselves as living in a Judeo-Christian culture, and think that Judaism is just, well, the Bible without the New Testament. It's just the Old Testament. And a lot of Christians have never even heard of the Talmud. I mean, I myself, I'd never heard of the Talmud until 3 or 4 years ago. I wasn't even aware of its existence. And I've now come to understand some of the things that are in it. And it's absolutely horrific. And it means that if you follow the Talmud, which was written in the 1st to the 4th century AD as a rejection of Christ. I mean, Christ is the fulfillment of the Old Testament. And a lot of Jews are Christians. There are Messianic Jews who follow Christ and gone that way. But there are some who follow the Talmud. And it's a horrific book, isn't it? And I think everyone should be aware of what's in there. And you've put that very, very well and succinctly, how that book is now having an incredible influence over Christian nations.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that you and I probably were not aware of that until, in my case also, 3-4 years ago, is because there's a death penalty for a Jew to tell a non-Jew about the Talmud. They know that it's not good. And in the Talmud, they also write that you are free to commit any crime against non-Jewish people. Even on the annual Purim, to take part in the annual Purim, I just posted a video of how they have kids dress up as Arabs and Jews. And then in the Purim, the kids in the schools are play killing the Arabs. I'm not kidding. It's happening. This is what they do. And on the Purim, they have to go in, if they take part in that. I'm not saying in all synagogues, because I'm not in all synagogues, but in certain synagogues, they have, when they take part in the Purim, in the ritual, annual ritual, they have to promise to break all promises to non-Jews in the following 12 months. And they that's totally fine. And I mean, come on. Now, that's enough. I mean, and there are so many assimilated, whether they are religious or non-religious Jewish people out there. I think, you had a good run. We all love you. We're not going to collectively punish you, all of you, for what some evil Jewish people have done of crimes. Mm. We are Christian people. We will only go for those who actually committed a crime. We're not going to go after his wife or his kids. This is not a Christian thing to do. And then I have another thing I would like to say is the Germans have been punished for 80 years. Mm. I mean, can you find an inch, an ounce of forgiveness in your heart? Isn't this enough? Isn't it enough now? The latest gimmick they now have found out is that now they have to be really ritualistically humiliated during the European Football Championship, and the German men are forced to play in pink.
No.
Come on.
I didn't know that. That's terrible, isn't it? It
is so in your face. We own you. Come on.
Mm.
That's not good. You know, we are nice people, and the Jewish people are nice, but we are all nice people. We should get along. And the thing is, the minute Germany get their freedom again, then Germany and Russia will find out that they could benefit each other with Russian energy, German ingenuity, and we would have freedom, democracy, and prosperity beyond belief if only we are allowed to not be socially engineered into hating each other and fighting all these ridiculous wars that already cost at least 500,000 young men their lives in Ukraine. It's horrible.
Yeah, well, it goes back a long way, doesn't it? I mean, I think, you know, we've had the world wars of the last century, but I think the greatest tragedy or tragedies of the last century is that there was enmity created between England or Britain and Germany, and Russia and Germany, and America and Germany, and now America and Russia, and Britain and Russia. And we have four great Christian nations here. If we all got along and helped each other and supported each other and worked for creating prosperity and building a Christian society in a Christian world, how incredible would the world be? But there's continual enmity being stirred up. And I speak against it. You speak against it. I mean, look at the Russophobia in all of the mainstream media, all over the West, because of, you know, what's going on in Ukraine. And you just think that this is perpetuating the tragedy and perpetuating, you know, something that is desperately wrong here, when we should all stop fighting against each other and, you know, start being friends again.
I totally agree. And if I can add this fight against Russians, it's again a sanction against human beings of flesh and blood with a beating heart. It's against the Russian people. It's not against and also all us non-Russians who have friends and family we love in Russia. It's not against, I mean, it's not against the corporations. 97% of all Western corporations who were there in March 2022 are still there. You can buy everything there. I was there last year visiting my Russian family, and everything is there. And the standard of living is just going one way. The sanctions are not working. The Russian people are hardworking. They don't understand this hate. They're very serious people. They're ready to fight. They don't want to fight. But if you want to fight, you know, they will hit back. And I have no shadow of doubt. If there is a war, they will win it. And I try very hard to show a third way. So you have one way. You are either pro-China and Russia or you're pro-NATO. But I would like to say there is actually another way. That is, there are some people who are running both, who are trying to stir up the beans and get both sides to fight each other. And I think it goes back a long way. If you read books by Golitsyn and Besmanov, they suggest that it was actually engineered in the Soviet Union back in the 60s, all the social engineering in the West, the youth revolution, the feminism, the attack on Christianity, was all engineered in the atheistic communist Soviet Union back in the 60s. These are firsthand witnesses who were present in the meetings who say that. And you can see it might have happened by other means, but there were definitely a motive, and they tried to do it, and they've succeeded to doing it. So that's the third way I'm trying to say, is that if someone is trying to infiltrate and destroy our Christian nations, and they're trying to make us fight with Russia and China.
Yeah, well, I mean, I absolutely agree with you because, you know, looking back in history, you know, just very briefly, there was this hideous revolution in 1917. The royal Romanov family was executed by, you know, Bolsheviks, and most of the Bolsheviks were Jewish, Talmudist Jewish people. And then revolution didn't happen and take off in the West, so cultural Marxism was developed. You know, that goes back from the 60s, and then it also goes back to the Frankfurt School in the 1920s as well. And one of the people involved in the Comintern at the time was Willy Munzenberg, who is reported to have said, "We will make Western civilization stink. We will change and undermine all its values and make life impossible." So, you know, that's really horrible. It's quite satanic. You've got these people who actually genuinely wanted to do that. But, you know, Mads, I totally agree with you on all of these things. I wish we could talk for much longer because, I mean, we've just touched the surface on this issue. And, you know, what you're saying about feminism being created, I mean, this is a cultural Marxist ideology where women are seen to be oppressed and they need to rise up and smash the patriarchy. And then you have homophobia and transphobia, where the LGBTs are created as a group, and then they need to rise up and smash heteronormativity and undermine Christian values and so on. So this is going on in multiple different parts of society, and we can see it. But anyway, Mads, thank you so much for joining me on the show today, and I really wish you well and the best with your prosperity party in Denmark. I hope one day we can be in the places of power and we can turn things around and we can get things back to normal. Mads Palsvik, thank you for joining me here on today's News Talk TNT.